honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, coming down the home stretch with 99-year-old George Coburn of Oceanside, California. Born in Minnesota, he moved to the San Diego area as a young boy and has really seen it grow and develop. He also witnessed so many key moments of World War II, from the attack on Pearl Harbor, which he survived by escaping from the sinking battleship USS Oklahoma, to the largest naval battle in history in October 1944, the Battle of Leyte Gulf, to multiple encounters with kamikazes, including the one that left him peppered with shrapnel off of Okinawa. Well, and we think of Okinawa as the last major battle of the war in the Pacific, but yeah. The reality is there was still danger after that. I mean, the Indianapolis was sunk in July, months later. So what was it like from Okinawa till the war ended in August?
Well, after Okinawa, the Louisville went to Pearl Harbor to the Navy Yard. We got a new stack. And while we were there, the first A bomb was dropped, and then the second. And we felt pretty sure that was going to end the war. And I didn't know anything about A bombs, and hardly anybody on the ship did. I suppose probably some of the higher ranking officers knew what it was. But anyway, we felt thankful that the war was probably over, and it was for us. We went to what they called magic carpet duty. And I don't remember how many trips we made from Guam to San Francisco, but we did it repeatedly. And we hauled an awful lot of passengers from the war zones out there back to the States. And then the Louisville went through the canal and to Philadelphia Navy Yard, where she was put out of commission. And when they announced the opportunities to leave the service, I had a new wife and a new baby. And I decided enough is enough. I'm out. So I left. And but like I say, a month later, I went back to work for the Navy.
I was trying to figure that out, because here from the time you enter in 1938 to the end of the war in 45, I mean, these are some what typically are the best years of people's lives that you've given to our country, and you've almost been killed a couple times. You only stayed away for a month, and you went right back to work as a civilian on a Navy base? What was that all about?
I had to make a living.
Well, you mentioned your wife, and that was the first thing I noticed when I walked in, was this beautiful portrait of your wife from when she worked at a photo studio. I mean, that looks like it's in the late 40s or 50s, maybe. How did you two meet?
That's another story.
And I see a big smile on your face.
It was Thanksgiving Day, and another young officer named Bob and I had taken a room together in a hotel in Vallejo. And sometime in the early afternoon, the phone rang and I answered it, and it was the front desk, and they said, "We have two young ladies down here that are looking for two officers to escort them to dinner at the home of the brother of one of these ladies. They'll have a nice Thanksgiving dinner for you." And so I said, "Send them up." Mm-hmm. Well, Jenny, that's Jenny, and Beth, her friend, came up, and Beth and I paired off, and Jenny paired off with Bob. Somehow, during the course of the evening, that got changed. I don't know how the hell it happened. I really don't. But anyway, It did, and we had a nice dinner, and Jenny told me later that one of the things that attracted her to me was the way I treated the daughter of her friend's brother. I don't remember much about that, but I remember I was sitting on the floor, and this little girl about 3 or 4 years old was bringing me stuff and said, "Look at this." I played along with her, and we had a good time. And it impressed Jenny very favorably, apparently. And anyway, our romance was mainly carried on through letters, and we wrote enormous numbers of them. I was gone for 14 months after that. And I might add, that was 14 months and almost never got off the ship. Oh, long, dreary struggle. I don't remember exactly what part of the Pacific I was in during that time. I used to say, our operating area is from the west coast of the United States to the east coast of China, and from the Bering Sea to the Antarctica.
And that's not much of a stretch.
That just about covers it, yeah.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out that's important to you. I know you received the Purple Heart. Are there other decorations that you take pride in?
Actually, Linda is working with our congressman to try to get the other medals that I earned supplied to me. The Purple Heart, that was well documented, and I have the award, and I even have a picture of the skipper pinning the heart on me. So,
Well, and I guess I have to ask you as well, since you were a part of that day, and everyone heard the president on the radio the next day calling it a date which will live in infamy. That might be the speech that's been heard more than any other speech in history. So Pearl Harbor has this mystique around it. I'm sure it's something that's on your consciousness and has been for a long time. When you've been back to Pearl Harbor, what are the things that come to mind for you? What do you reflect on?
When I go back to Pearl Harbor, I've only been there once, and that probably would be the last time that I was there. But Jenny and I went to Hawaii, and we had to go out to Pearl Harbor, of course. And I don't know, I wasn't impressed really deeply one way or another. I think that time decades later, when I was thinking about it, and it came back so darn real, that's most prominent time, even more prominent than the actual experience of Pearl Harbor. Can't explain it.
Why do you think we should remember Pearl Harbor? Why does it still matter today?
Well, it matters because the thing we need to remember is that even though the world looks pretty peaceful, that you always have to be on your guard. And you don't want to let your ability to fight be severely diminished. It's been kind of an up and down thing in recent years, and I think that our present president has done some strengthening, and hopefully it will continue. But anyway, the basic idea is you go back to the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. Mm-hmm.
I know I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a really unique story that you have. Is there something, as you look back on all of this, that you would say you're most proud of or you're most thankful for?
I think the Battle of Surigao Strait, and I got worried about the enemy getting too close, and I was on the rangekeeper, and of course, I had the distance to the enemy all the time, so I started calling out the distance. We got down to 13,800 yards, and I thought, that's too damn close. Yeah, but we did finally, at that point, we got the word to commence firing, and we'd been ready for a long time. and we got them dead to right. I kind of feel for those poor guys that were coming toward us, but I watched, I had a radar repeater right next to me, and I watched our first salvo go out, arc out, and drop right into my target. And I think they couldn't have been totally surprised, because they had torpedo boats attacks and a couple of destroyers attacked. So they knew that we were well aware of their approach, and they had to know that we weren't going to just sit there and let them come. Anyway, we made a real dent in the strength of the Japanese Navy at that one battle. I don't know how many ships were sunk, but a lot of them.
Well, and you've been working for a while now on your memoirs in written form, an account of all of these things. You and Linda Dudick have been working on this. I'm sure a lot of people are going to read that. What do you hope they get out of it when they read your story? Is there a message you want them to receive, or something you hope they draw from it?
Well, one of the things that I would like them to remember, and that's always be prepared, and don't cry over the wealth that goes into keeping the military up, because it's necessary if you're going to survive in this world.
Well, and you've survived for nearly 100 years. You got any big plans for your 100th birthday in October?
I look at it like I look at everything else. Whatever comes, I'll handle it when I get there.
Well, I just have one more question, and if there's anything we left out that you want to get in there, feel free. I'm thinking about everything you've shared, and you made it clear you've never been a religious guy, and you feel lucky. But have you ever looked at the totality of all those chance circumstances of how the porthole appeared and you squeezed yourself out of that on December 7th, how you survived the rest of that day, the kamikaze and the bomb, and not even knowing how you survived or what happened to you for a few minutes, and then having a wife almost dropped in your lap when they say there's two ladies here and it's Thanksgiving Day? Have you ever wondered if there's somebody up there manipulating that or pulling those strings for you?
Never wondered, no. You know, when I was a child, I was sent to Sunday school, and from Sunday school, they moved us over to a church. I still remember that we had a preacher who was one of those very loud preachers. I mean, he turned me off. I'd listen to him, and I'd think, how do people believe this stuff? If he'd been more convincing instead of so darn loud, it might have changed my whole life. I don't know.
No, you never know. And for those of us who carry a different view on faith and see the value of sharing what we believe with others, maybe that story will give us something to think about. Before we wrap up, Mr. Coburn, is there anything else that you'd like to say about that branch of service you gave some of your best years to and continued to work for as a civilian for so many decades afterwards?
I still feel a kinship with the United States Navy, even though I've been separated from it totally for a long while now. But it's an important part of my life, and I'll always feel that kind of a feeling of belonging, but I can't go back there again. I'm too darn old.
I bet you could still fit in your uniform, though.
I probably could, yeah. No, I couldn't. My waist when I left the Navy was 32, and now I'm buying pants that have a 36-inch waist. I wouldn't fit in a 32 anymore.
The hat would still fit.
Yeah, I haven't got big-headed.
And we trust that all of this airtime is not going to change that. George Coburn, 99 years old. Come October, he'll hit the century mark, and hopefully we can all celebrate with him by reading that book about his life and life in the Navy that's almost complete. I'll be sure to alert you when it is, but we're out of time for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.